It's the moment of alliums, as Paula Panich calls it, and she invites us out into the Getty Garden for the return of the shooting stars, the blue-violet alliums, as they burst in spring, these green shoots rocketing from the rich, dark soil toward the quilted blue sky. She loves everything about the allium, just the sound of that singular flower word, allium, that long, breathy alpha vowel opening, followed by the flick of the tip of the tongue on the roof of the mouth, plunging into that E and ending with the harmonic hum. Allium. These blooms are headstrong, architectural, modernist. They stand straight, contained, essentialists of the sensual, to borrow a phrase from architecture critic Peter Rudi. They are a riot of geometry and complexity. They live for honesty and art, she says. The day I visit, the swan-like stalks with the still-tight buds, the weather is mild, perfect, and now comes the expectant chatter of young children herded by clipboard-bearing keepers. A quartet of six-year-olds engages in an exaggerated march in front of the alliums. Wait, I want to say, look at these. But they are engaged in a subtle squabble as to who is the leader. At some point, though, they will see this once-a-year thrust of blue-purple roundness and be humbled by beauty. But not today. But for you, you are over six, and you don't want to miss the alliums, especially A. Schubertii, with its shooting stars exploding past the flower globe like firecrackers. Words of Paula Panich from an essay titled The Moment of Alliums in the Iris 2011 at the Getty Center. Panich leaves us with the image of a dynamic sky show, even the sound of firecrackers as the alliums shooting stars explode before us in their blue-purple roundness. And that's just something of the energy and dynamics of the dance of the flower paintings in the work of Julia Einstein, in an exhibition titled The Artist's Garden at Main Street Galleries in Kingston, now through October 29th. She lives and works and tends her garden in Maine, but she has ties to the Wyoming Valley through family and friends. We had a chance to talk by phone with Julia Einstein about her new paintings and what she might have been like when she was the age of the children we just met in the Getty Garden.
I think that I was that kid that had a drawing going on. I drew in the margins at school on papers. I was that kid that went on to art school. As soon as I knew there was such a thing, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I come from a family that everyone can draw. You know, my mother and my father. My father was a draftsman for many years, and my mother used to draw portraits of everybody. So I sort of grew up around it. My uncle was an artist. So everybody sort of didn't mind picking up a pencil and starting to draw. Not everyone in my family went to art school as a result, but it was sort of just that thing, as well as music in my family. I know that when I was a little girl, I would get little projects in my head, and I don't think I ever talked about them or shared them necessarily, but they were sort of these little drawings that I kind of worked on the side. A lot of them were design. I would design outfits for entire families. I'd come from a big family, you know, so I'd have a design project going. And then when I got a little bit older in high school, I thought I was going to be a ceramic artist. You know, sort of drawing was okay, but making something in clay became what I liked to do.
And the Rhode Island School of Design is quite a prestigious place to take your talents.
Right. It was fantastic. So I ended up getting a degree in painting from UMass Amherst, and that was a great school. I come from Massachusetts. It's a gigantic school. It's 25,000 students. So in the art department, within a university, I think, really worked well for me because I could take other classes, and also I sort of broadened my horizons a little bit. I came from a small town, and I really respected my professors. So after that, I went to Rhode Island School of Design for graduate school for a master's of art teaching. And what was nice about that was that at RISD, it's all about the concept. You know, it's sort of like, yes, yes, you can draw. Yes, you can paint. Yes, you can make something. But what's it about? You know, what are you going to talk about? And then what are you trying to tell us? What do you want us to see? And for me, having a nice, firm background, getting a BFA, it just sort of became this wonderful way of becoming a very strong art teacher. And that's what I did for 10 years. I was the high school art teacher in Massachusetts. So the idea of being interested in a concept that I sort of was grounded from going to RISD, really, I think what that ended up doing for me as a teacher was having that desire and an ability to kind of look at my colleagues and seeing what connecting concepts I could sort of delve into and understand what I was trying to teach these young people coming into my classes.
And how does education figure in your life right now? We know, and we're going to talk about your paintings, but does education still figure in your life?
It does. So I went from being classroom teacher to coming up to Maine, and for many years I was a museum education person. So I was a museum educator. I was the studio person at the Portland Museum of Art. So in the education department, there was a public programs person, there was a student and teacher person, and there was somebody who coordinated all the docents and the tours, and then I was the person who worked with families and also ran the art studio, which was on the bottom floor of the museum. And then now I am in the history museum world. So while it is not art per se, it certainly has a lot of the same the same skills. It takes the same types of skills for people to approach and kind of understand what they're doing when they're in my case, they are history houses, historic sites. And so it's that visual world and how to notice something, how to observe something, and as a result of that, how to ask a question about it or wonder about it and all that kind of stuff. So it's this kind of interesting path. It's the same but different all the way through.
And how is what we'll see then in Kingston, Pennsylvania, the same but different?
There are some things that are the same. And that is, there are some things that there's this constant, which is, I would say, light and color. For many, many years, I made paintings of interior spaces that I was in. So one thing that remains the same throughout several years is the need to work from life. So I'm not working from a photograph. I have to physically be there. And that's because it has to do with light, too. So I'm in a space, I'm attracted to the space, and then I finally get to start sketching it and figuring it out and painting it. And then I end up composing or constructing that space onto a canvas. And they're representational, but they're not, you know, hyper realistic. But not to say that they're not impressionistic either. So in other words, if there's light coming in, I might accentuate the warmth of that light through a color palette. And it might seem a little expressive rather than naturalistic. But I used to make, a lot of those were very geometric paintings for many, many years. It was sort of like you're standing in a hallway and you can see beyond until you see through an almost open door and at the end of which there's a window. And I would edit out my view by putting perhaps something on a table in front of the window, and there would be something else in sort of the foreground. And after a while, I started to get closer and closer to that window. And then I started to realize that what was in front of the window was just as interesting, and that was, in my case, it was always a vase of flowers. So then I distilled it all down into these still lives with flowers.
It's ironic because we use the term still life, but your canvases are anything but still. There's such a dynamism there, and you actually use the word gesture when you write about these flowers that we see that are part of these spaces that you're creating.
It is funny. I almost hesitate to use that term when I describe my subjects. And they're not still, and the gesture is when I pick the flower, and a lot of times I do like to physically pick the flower from either my own garden or a friend's garden. It's funny because the title of the show is called The Artist's Garden, and because I was working so hard on the paintings this spring and early summer for the show, my garden started to I needed to go to friends' gardens to get flowers. But I did get the early irises, nasturtium. I went to a friend who had a great blooming of peonies. I went to another friend who had these fabulous bee balm, which has this really exotic look to it. So the act of picking the flower and then arranging it, there is that ability to sort of like put it into a vase, and I start editing it out. So I pick all the flowers, fill just, oh, I don't know, maybe five or six vases, and then have one vase that I know I'll work from, and then start putting one in, taking one out, putting one in, taking one out, until it becomes this rhythm within that bouquet. And the rhythm is a stem that sort of this made me, in my case, I tend to pick out these leggy stems. And there's that rhythm of each stem and leaf working off each other. And then there's also a nice in-between space. So it's sort of this composing, almost like a little dance, almost, you know, the way that the stems go around the vase. So I do think it is about capturing that gesture of that. And then the other part of the gestural part is when you are first learning to be an artist, one of the things you do is you work from the figure and you create several types of drawings, but one of them is gesture drawing. And the idea is that somebody's posing and somebody is timing them and they say, okay, 30 seconds. So everyone's sketching, done. Okay, 30 seconds. So everyone sketches, done. And then it might go up, okay, let's do a 2-minute. And at that point, it seems like forever, you know, because you're so sort of adept at capturing the essential sort of line of somebody's pose. And I do think that's the same way as when I make the initial sort of sketches and paint of these flowers, is that I study them first with pencil and kind of get the structure of them. And then when I go to make that painting, it's sort of that capturing that line of that flower, how they relate to each other. So there is that gesture there. There is that movement, that rhythm. And the other thing, of course, is they're living. So the act of getting what you need, so I have to get what I need relatively quickly, usually within a day, within one sitting. I can sometimes push it to the next, but after that, the flower completely changes. It starts to shrivel up a little bit, it changes color, it droops a little bit, the petals aren't the same. So you have to sort of, you know, work relatively quickly and kind of after a while kind of know what you might want and at the same time be ready for something that might surprise you, you know. So I guess there's that movement on many different levels, and that is why I describe it as seeing gestures in nature.
And you also used the word, I noticed, portrait of the flowers. And again, that's a word describing something that is alive.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I thought of it like they're posing for me, or I'm setting them up for their portrait. But I guess there is a bit of personality and a bit of living personality with each bouquet.
The other thing that is so striking, of course, is what you told us about at the gallery with Sally, and that is your sense of color.
First of all, working with Sally has just been so fantastic. She has just a great eye. And when I brought all my paintings in, she really helped with installing them in such a way that the space that she has these solo sort of changing exhibits is way in the back. And so she said, let's try this and put the most vivid, most vibrant color paintings with those color palettes on the wall that when you enter from the front door, you see it. And then as you walk closer, you walk through this, it's sort of a wide hallway, but it acts like a room. And in that space, there is a series on two walls on either side of you that are much more subtle in terms of color. And when they're put together, they're put together in the line that indicates or represents the window ledge is the same on each one. So when you're in that space, you kind of walk through this calmer kind of color palette, and there is almost like an interior, you know, you're sort of connected with the horizon line. And then, of course, you're very close up to these very bright colors. So there is a nice play there. And so I thank Sally for sort of helping me with that and to see that in the gallery space. And it's perfect. The space is perfect for my colors. And so I did try to have, I decided that I needed to have a kind of an array of colors. So yes, nasturtium are very vibrant, and when you look quite close at them, you'll see just highly saturated yellow and next to the orange. And I decided that I wasn't going to put a very pale color in the background. It had to be sort of this vibrant pink behind it. So there was this little vibration going on between the flower and the background. So I kind of played with that, and that worked out pretty well with, like I say, the softer palettes.
And it looks like you love paint. There's texture to these flowers.
It was very interesting with this new set, this new series. It was quite simple in that rather than canvas, I bought some linen. So it was working on gessoed linen. And you would think that there's not that much difference, but there is. And it affects the way your brush, you know, filled with paint lands on the surface. And the difference between that woven canvas and the linen has these sort of lines behind it. And, of course, that is also completely opposite from working on a board, which other small pieces, I have painted boards. So the surface allowed me to pay attention to the brush strokes. So I really did want to fool around with, and it all started when I worked on those softer toned paintings. I thought, oh, I need to do something if I'm taking away the color. And then I need to work on the brushwork. And so I really kind of put to the test where I fooled around with the medium and I put a little bit more gloss. And that way I sort of put my brush into, say, the paint with highly glossed glaze over it, and that allows for that sort of flickering brush work. So yeah, I do love paint. I mean, it's the thing that separates, oh, I don't know, you know, a painter from somebody who's a printmaker. It has to do with sort of the act of putting something and leaving it on the surface rather than sort of flat on that plane of a piece of paper. So yeah, you have to deal with it. You have to sort of be ready to put that brushwork in. And then the other thing that helped me with that is I decided that I was going to do a couple of other things with the paintings for this show, in that I decided to almost look like a views in. So I had these small 5x5 boards, and then I decided to get 30x30 canvases and then 36x36 canvases. So these are sort of like little, almost like little viewfinders into a bouquet. And at that point, you know, a nasturtium is, instead of being, you know, a tiny little 2-inch flower, it's 10 inches across. So once you do that, or once I did it, I realized I can't be flat. I have to look at what I was going to do with the brushwork in sort of capturing the texture of that flower that you would never notice. I mean, you don't sort of notice all the little teeny tiny parts of a little fluffy stamen at the end of a nasturtium, you know, until you have a brush that's 2 inches across and you're making that rather than having a very small brush, you know. So there were certain things I kind of set it up for myself to fool around with paint, which was fun.
In terms of other artists, whom do you love from any age to look at? Whose work do you relish?
I think since I was a kid and up until now, Matisse is my favorite artist. And, you know, Matisse is all about color. And that surprise, to me, Matisse is about surprising somebody with color. So when you look at a painting by Matisse, you think, really? That color is next to that one? You know, and it sounds very analytical, but you fall in love with the painting first, and then for me, it's like I'm examining it, and then I go back to just loving it. And I feel the same way about Bonnat. So his work is that expressionistic work where all of a sudden there's a, you know, vivid orange next to a weird lime green and next to, you know, a pink, and it's all within a floor of a bathroom. And I think the same thing. I think, oh, I love that painting. Oh, I have to look at it now. So I have to sort of study the way that those colors are put together. So I guess I go for the colorists, and those are artists that always have been my favorites. It's funny, just this past summer, in a local museum to me up in Maine is in Ogunquit, there's a Jamie Wyeth show. And the particular paintings that are up, they're the paintings of seagulls and others. But it's just extraordinary the way that, you know, I think it's almost as if he uses day glow green paint. And it's just sort of splattered on there behind the seagull who's looking at you. And I think, oh, right, of course I'm attracted to that painting, to that sort of set of paintings that are up right now, because they're sort of muscular in a way, but still it's the color that I'm interested in. So I guess it always has to be the colorist for me.
Hearing what you've just said and hearing the excitement and passion in your voice, in fact, about your own work and about the work of these other artists. In our world, when we're so attached to our screens now, I would think it's important for us to get into museums and galleries and have an experience of something that someone has done with his or her own hand.
I agree. I think that it's that thing where sometimes you go with a friend, you know, somebody says, come on, let's go. And you say, oh, I don't know, I don't want to go to that show, or I didn't think I wanted to. And next thing you know, you are, I guess, it's that sort of act of learning something new. Or maybe it's simply that I'm always been an educator, so I love that moment when all of a sudden you see something that you don't understand, and then you try to figure it out. And in the meantime, you many times fall in love with that, what you're looking at as a result. But with the gallery, to me, there's that other whole aspect. You know, I mean, Sally Casey, she's there, and she's talking to people that are going to take that work home and live with it. So it's quite different from in a museum. For me, all those years working in a museum as a museum educator, it was, you're going to find a friend in a work of art that you'll simply be able to come back to year after year after year, you know, and bring friends to it. Whereas in a gallery, it's sort of that thing of, do you wonder what happens if you lived with it? Where would you put it? I mean, Is it something quite intimate? Like, is it next to your bed? Or is it something quite, you know, in a corporate office? So there's that interesting act of looking at art for all different reasons, you know.
Are there things that you would like to tell our listeners before they go to see your show?
No, I think that the big thing is it's called The Artist Garden. I'm curious to know if I didn't call it that, what they would think of it, if they would think of it that way. You know, I've sort of been describing it to people of it's really like walking into a garden, sort of, if you were an artist. So I'm curious how people respond to that aspect of it, or whether or not they simply say, no, it's very modern. It's a very modern take, so I don't see the garden type of thing.
And are you going to put your own garden to bed now for the fall? Are you putting in bulbs or anything like that to come up in the spring?
My big thing is every year I want to put in allium bulbs. They don't always come up, and those are the flowers that come up. When they come up, they are these round globes, and sometimes they're the size of a small child's head. You know, they're about, oh, I don't know, maybe 10, or not a small child really, but it's about maybe 10 inches in diameter, and they just look so great in the garden. So that's my big thing every fall is to sort of get a few more and see if they'll come up that year. But yeah, it's always sort of a sad kind of end of the season.
Artist Julia Einstein speaking with us about an exhibition of her new paintings titled The Artist's Garden at Main Street Galleries in Kingston. Now, through October 29th, she lives and works and tends her garden in Maine, but she has ties to the Wyoming Valley through Joe Rillo, to whom she is married, a much-loved musician who often returns to the area to perform with Lex Romaine, Lex and Joe. We had a chance to speak with her by phone, and you can see The Artist's Garden, as we said, through October 29th at Main Street Galleries, 370 Pier Street in Kingston, just across the river from Wilkes-Barre. Sally Casey is the gallery director. For more information on the web, mainstreetg.com, mainstreetg.com. And to see Julia's work, you can visit her own website, juliaeinstein.com, juliaeinstein.com. It's The Artist's Garden, New Paintings by Julia Einstein through October 29th at Main Street Galleries, 370 Pier Street in Kingston, across the river from Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, mainstreetg.com, mainstreetg.com.